Willkommen in der Welt von Du Digitale, in der die Zukunft des E-Commerce schon heute beginnt. Alexander Otto und Marcel Brindöpke führen durch das Labyrinth der digitalen Revolution. Von den neuesten E-Commerce-Trends bis hin zu den disruptiven Technologien, die den Markt formen. Bist du bereit?
Welcome to the second episode of Du Digitale, that one podcast with topics out of digital retail that is actually funny, right? First of all, as you can hear, yes, we can English. And the reason is we always said when we did the preparation for the podcast, Marcel and I, that we will do international focused episodes in English as well. Who would have thought that the second episode is already an English spoken episode? So we're into this. We're doing this, but please forgive as we are not native speakers. Our lack of conversational brilliance here and there. We give our best as always. So that said first. Secondly, I really have to say a big thank you for the numerous positive reactions after the first episode. I must say I was really overwhelmed that there were so many reactions and private mails and LinkedIn. We had also some hearts and thumbs up. Marcel, I don't know how you feel about that, and if you have already sent out some signature cards to some people.
Yes, well, first of all, hello from my side as well. That was very brilliant so far, Alex. So I hope you can keep up that level throughout this episode. I'm really looking forward to this ECD special. That's one of the reasons why we do it in English, of course, to lure some more people in to the ECD next week, which is prepared as well. And I had some very positive feedback as well, to say that, even from people who wouldn't need to. So that was quite nice, and it was promising. So we will. I hope we can keep up this good attitude here with a little twink in our eyes when we speak about some topics, to not make it too positive or too hard for people to listen.
Oh, you're so serious today, Marcel.
Yes, I am. Just for the start. No worries.
No, that's good. I mean, we are touched by the reactions, right? And yeah. I must say I'm also a bit excited and in that good kind of piece of being nervous because this is something new, again, this episode. As you already mentioned, Marcel, this is not only an episode in English. It's also a very, very special episode as such. Because the ECD is only 1 week away. It's the 12th of June in Munich, in the Wappenhalle, where we gather more than 500 people to have a day of networking and creating business opportunities and having some lovely gin tonics in the evening. That will be great. It's a really, really kind of breaking news, I have to say, that we are sold out.
What?
Yes. Who would have thought of that? So I just checked the numbers around noon. We have this daily check-in and the ECD team. And we were very surprised. There was a lot happening in the last couple of days. And we are sold out. So the reason is, to be honest, that we are sold out, that there is a very, very strict limitation in the location that we are. It's the old charter hall of the old Munich airport. And this is the highest rank of, the English word for Denkmalschutz. Now it's getting building protection. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. That you can have. So all the fire and protection laws have the highest numbers here. So there's no room to play with the exact number of people that we can bring in. So this is the first good news of today. We're sold out, and I think that also our guest that we're going to introduce later will be happy about that. So this is the reason we took the ECD as kind of an overarching topic for today, because we will take a deeper look at what we're going to talk about at the ECD on that infamous expert stage. Because you might have guessed it, the panels on the expert stage will be moderated by Du Digitale, Marcel.
No way. I'm in, although it's sold out.
You're in Authority Sold Out. Maybe it's the reason for being sold out, because people might think that you and I are going to play table tennis again for the start of the show. I don't know. It's hard to beat, right?
It is hard to beat, but you keep a secret of what we're doing. So to prepare myself, I basically practice some more sports which fit on a stage, which is basically dart and any British pub sports. So I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen next week. I'll be prepared for whatever it comes. And it is great to be there again with you and speak about several great topics, which we addressed today as well in our episode here, because it's always a great mixture of insights, really meaningful insights. I always see people taking notes when they listen to the people on stage who are basically the stars of the digital marketplace sphere here in Germany. So it's great to be on stage with them. Of course, it's a great family meeting, more or less, where everyone gets together again, maybe after a year and not seeing each other. So I'm looking forward to the event next week, and I think it's going to be great. And I know a couple of questions we're going to ask. There's some toughies. So no one gets off the stage easy, but I think we generate some great insights for the people.
Yes, and not only next week, but before I come to the next part of this episode, I have to admit, because you mentioned darts, and sorry for all you darts fans outside there, I don't get the point of this whole dart hype with people being in a huge pub and watching people throwing little arrows on the wall, to the wall. I don't get it. I don't know. If you are you a darts fan?
I think many spectators don't get it as well, but they can get drunk on a very sticky floor, as far as I know. But well, it's an uprising sport. I mean,
there you go.
We could go way into details, but well, we have esports as well, right? So people think that pulling a thumb on a keyboard or a controller.
Let's smoke e-cigarettes and play e-dart then. This might be the future. But it should be easy. You're so tall, you can throw it down.
I just stick it in. Yeah, that's just, but this is why I'm not allowed on stage, basically. Wouldn't work. Especially, it's the same with a snooker or billiard, right? I mean, I could just stick it in. But so these sports are out. So I'm looking forward. Maybe we can play, I don't know the English word for federball, badminton. I think it's badminton, right?
It's just badminton.
It could be badminton.
Well, a good idea, but I keep this a secret. And before this takes us any further down the road where we don't want to go, I think we got something here.
Oh my God, what's going to happen?
We've got a connection.
Okay. Yes. As said, this is a very special episode today. We welcome the first guests of our show already in the second episode. I am excited very much to say hello to, first of all, Jan Bartels, the SVP of Zeus, which is the B2B arm of Zalando, so to speak. We can talk about that later. Hi, Jan. And Thomas Hagemann, the co-founder and CEO, is that right, Thomas, of Seven Senders. Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
Long time no speak. I think the last time we met, besides the ECD last year, that I keep in mind, that was your surprise appearance at the ECD in London, which made me very happy. You were suddenly there.
That's correct. Great. Absolutely. Yeah, I liked it. Really, really nice.
And I also like the fact that we have the 7th ECD this year, and you are part of the 7 Senders and sponsoring the meeting lounge this year, which is fantastic. So thank you for that. We'll come back to you in a minute. Jan, I know you're traveling a lot, but are you still in Berlin or already in Munich preparing for the ECD?
I would love to be already in Munich. I'm actually still in Berlin, but I'm already preparing for ECD. And I mean, I'm a big fan of ECD, already very much looking forward to the days that I'll spend in Munich with you.
This was easy to win my heart over. So this is fantastic. Let's stay with you for a moment, Jan. So nice that you're here. Zeus will be the main sponsor of the event. We come to that later for a moment. But first of all, it's about you, right? So it's the person that is here and not the company. So please, can you introduce yourself briefly as a person and maybe also as the role you have within Zeus?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Jan. Together with my teams, our job is to make merchants across Europe successful with their e-commerce strategies. I'm responsible for the B2B arm that we built within Zalando ZEOS. 10 years with Zalando, had various roles in this role for 2 years. I mean, what all these roles have in common is that it's about building something. So built together with my team in the early years, a warehouse management system, expanded our logistics network from 1.5 sites when I joined to meanwhile more than 12 sites. I was also leading customer fulfillment, so logistics and customer care for a while. But building I also love to do in my private life. So I live with my wife and my two kids in Berlin. I'm still building a lot of Lego with my kids. I love to do construction work in my garden. Recently installed a pipe system, a sprinkler system in the garden. So building, constructing is what I really, really love also in my spare time.
Oh, that's fantastic. I might ask you to come over because there's a lot of construction going on at my house at the moment. We're building a terrace. So if you hear some strange noises, this is not me. This is outside the house. So I'm not doing it myself. So this is okay.
I've never built a terrace, but I mean, it would be a good training ground to then build a terrace next to my place.
They can do it.
Alex is offering this.
We could try to do it with Lego first. This is what I'm able to. So that was nice to hear that. I have two more rather personal questions, Jan. What is the number one song on your Lonely Island playlist?
Oh, so just one song is not that easy. But then I would go for We Are Gonna Win from Bryan Adams. That's what I hear quite often in the morning if I need to energize myself. If I would be on a lonely island, I guess I would need a lot of energy to wake up in the morning and to get up to speed. So therefore, I would need some kind of that song. My second song would probably be something from NoFX, like Linoleum. I'm still a big NoFX fan. So that's what I would take along on my playlist.
I'm happy that you said that. I was a bit skeptical about the Bryan Adams answer, but with NoFX, you won me over the second time already. That's brilliant. Third and last question. Mountain or sea?
Also a difficult one. In the winter, mountain. In the summer, a mountain close to the sea. And I love skiing. I also love, for example, traveling, backpacking, and then usually a combination of mountain and sea. Pretty nice. So, for example, New Zealand, you would find that.
I would love to go there. I totally get it, but only from the Lord of the Rings movies. So this is the only touch point that I have with New Zealand. Thank you. Thomas, coming over to you. Please introduce yourself briefly as a businessman and as a private man.
All right. Hi, Alex. Hi, Marcel. Hi, Jan. Thanks for being here. Thomas, my name, Hageman. I'm the co-founder of Seven Senders, co-CEO there as well. I'm originally from Bielefeld, the city that apparently doesn't exist, right? We all know that. And then made my way from Karlsruhe via Zurich, Dortmund, to Berlin. That's about 15 years ago. Started working here, always been in logistics, any kind of logistics, warehouse, supply chain, strategy. And then, end of 2014, met Johannes, a friend of mine from university, came back to Berlin. And we had this idea to build Seven Senders. Funny enough, it hasn't changed too much from the main founding thought. So we're still doing what we do. I guess we come to that later. So I'm still living in Berlin, enjoying it here, having a good time in my free time. I'm trying to do as much sport as I can, try to also be at the ocean, do sport there. And if you guys want to build a terrace, you can call me. I've done it once. I'm not sure if I can recommend it. You do it the right way, Alex, and get someone to do it.
Well, thanks for offering. So after this episode, I'm going to take a look at how far they got, and then I will tell you. Yeah, thanks. You mentioned sports a lot, and I know that, of course, because we know each other for a couple of years now. So I have a question for you, and this is really interesting to me. You have only one pick for your final streetball game against Michael Jordan and Steph Curry. Who is your pick? Who is your pick?
Should have known you. You go for basketball as we share the love for the game, right? Yeah, luckily you didn't pick tall players. Yeah, I think Jordan is just below 2 meters and Curry is probably a bit smaller than I am. So then I would probably, you know, that I'm going to choose the guy anyways. I would probably choose Dirk Nowitzki on my side. So we got like 2 meter 13 and he's just going to shoot and I probably have to defend Curry.
Which is an easy one.
Yeah. He doesn't score from the distance.
He scores from the distance. So I believe. I mean, the question is: are we talking about Jordan now? I mean, you see the documentary, probably a bit easier.
a bit easier. But I think he would still be so competitive; he just would jump over you. I don't know. By the way, I thought about it too, because and I thought I would have picked Shaquille O'Neal because he would just smash two of them to the ground and just That's take true. Them both, right? No, of course, Dirk Nowitzki, great pick. So if you hear that once, Swish 41, we love you. And this is fantastic. Close to my hometown. He is born in Franconia, Germany. So this is always something special for me. Third and last one, cats or dogs, Thomas?
Very easy, dogs.
You're a dog person. I would have guessed so. You have one or two or three?
Not myself, no.
But
no. Maybe living in Berlin is not the ideal place. No. And my lifestyle is also not ideal for that.
There are many, many dogs walking around that you could just caress without owning them in Berlin, right?
That's kind of true.
Okay, thank you for this bit of personal insights. I like that a lot. Marcel, you can wake up again. Sorry for that.
Still on? Okay, yeah,
we're still on. We have these handpicked guests, and we have this great start. Maybe now we go to a bit more serious topics, and you could tell those two what we have planned with them. That what do they have to do? What have we in mind here?
Yeah, well, first of all, from my side as well, welcome to the show. So glad to have so prestigious guests here, even on our second episode. I mean, you put all your reputation on risk by joining, so that's actually quite cool. what we want to do today is have a deeper look into your offers, of course, because you play a vital role in e-commerce and marketplace business with your services, and also going through the topics of the main stage next week on the ECD to get your opinion on this. Jan, for you, it's a trial run as you will be on the stage next week, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah. And these are basically the two main topics we're going to go through with you. And yeah, so if you have no further questions for the moment, I think we just can start and go through the topics. Jan, maybe we can start with you. As Alex already said, you're responsible for Zeos, which generated quite a buzz the last few months after announcing your strategy and, of course, announcing the new role of Zeos. Maybe you can explain in one or maybe two sentences what Zeos is all about and what you want to establish with Zeos in our market.
One sentence. So Zeos provides an operating system for the online fashion and lifestyle industry and helps brand and retailers to unlock Europe.
Wow, that is great. You enhance it with an and. That is great. Maybe you can enhance a bit more and we give you the opportunity to dig a bit deeper into the service offering. When you say operating model, that's cool. I mean, it's basically generated, I think, from ZFS or from a logistics point of view. So what made you think enhancing that to an operating model could be a good idea?
Yeah, so thanks for giving me also the opportunity to spend a bit more than one sentence on this. It's hardly
not cruel.
It's just that one sentence. So when we build an operating system for the fashion and lifestyle industry, we basically, first of all, productize the capabilities that made Zalando successful. The capabilities in technology and the capabilities in logistics that we use to build the 15 billion euros business that Zalando is today. And we are now offering these capabilities to merchants, so brands and retailers across Europe that want to make their online business more successful. And this operating system consists basically of three layers that can be used standalone in a modular way or fully integrated as an operating system. And these three layers are firstly logistics. So brands and retailers get access to probably the most advanced fulfillment network that fashion and lifestyle Europe has to offer. So basically, they can benefit from the customer convenience that Zalando consumers are already enjoying that much today. Secondly, on the software side, we build the tools that help merchants to manage all the e-commerce matters out of one user interface. That includes tools helping them to list the right inventory, do the discounting, pricing, managing returns, managing stock levels, and so on, all conveniently out of one interface. And then the third layer being services, or the services that you need on top to be successful in online in e-commerce. So for example, content production, customer care services, and so on. While the latter, we are very much building as an ecosystem, so where third parties can offer basically their services on top of our operating system. So, for example, a content producer offering their photo production services to the merchants that we have already on the US. So that was no more than one sentence.
Oh, this is, but it's great, especially that you showed it in the kind of layer structure, right? Where Tradebyte is in the middle layer, if I remember the chart correctly. What I wonder is, when we speak about growth strategy from large marketplaces, we see that most of them go to B2B services, right? I mean, we have Otto, who is basically from an owner perspective in the real estate and payment area. We see Amazon with the AWS approach. We see About You, which is smaller but quite comparable to Zalando, going to the B2B scale, like let's say e-commerce shop system, shop framework logic. Why would you say is that a great enhancement in the business model for large marketplaces?
So from my perspective, it creates win-win-win situations, right? And that's what we are all after. So actually, the idea was born based on merchants that were already using Zalando fulfillment solutions, asking for, couldn't we use the stock positions that we already have in your warehouses? Couldn't we use that more efficiently? And couldn't we use the same stock to also fulfill orders on, for example, About You, Otto, ASOS, and the likes? And therefore, we have already invested into that fulfillment network. So merchants don't have to take these investments now on their own. So that's clear win for the merchants. But it also creates a clear win for our ecosystem. So for the ecosystem of the Zalando Group, because we can leverage our logistics network much better. We can leverage the capabilities that we built and technology much better. And that also helps us to invest even more into these capabilities and make them even better. And last but not least, it also creates a win for the European consumer, because we will help the industry to distribute goods more broadly to more countries, to more consumers within the online space, and at the same time give them the same convenient access to that inventory that they're already used to from the Zalando platform. So clear win-win-win situations that we are creating.
That is very cool. I will have tons of questions, but I'm going to unload them next week. So if you're listening to this and you want to hear more about it and dig deeper, I would have said, ask Alex to get some tickets, but it's sold out. So I hope you already have your tickets. Otherwise, is there any kind of public viewing in front of the Wappenhalle, Alex, in case you have more interesting... Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have these guests who want to come in, right? And you scratch at the window and kidding. Still, still you can ask for a ticket, by the way, because you never know if somebody steps back or something. But yes, thank you, Jan, also from my end. I'm very happy to be on the panel also as a co-host next week and to dig deeper into that. Yeah, but I leave it up to you, Marcel. You're on fire now, so just carry on.
Yeah, I want to bring Thomas in because, as Jan said, on the service layer, this should be an ecosystem with many service providers. And I guess that SevenSenders is very keen on being maybe a partner even from this network. So, Thomas, before we dig deeper, maybe you can also tell us a bit about what SevenSenders is doing exactly with the one-sentence approach and then elaborate. So you can use the marketing slogan first and then go a bit deeper in your offering.
We connect people in Europe with merchants in Europe. How do we do that? I guess that was the first sentence. How do we do that? We've built a platform in the middle where we connect European last mile carriers with European online shops. Just because Jan said that word earlier, and it's also very important in our business model. It's the way how you can unlock Europe in e-commerce. What's special about Europe, and that's kind of one of the founding ideas also of Seven Senders, it's not easy to transfer to, for example, to the US because it works a bit different. What's so special about Europe is we got whatever 27, 28, however you want to call it, countries, however you want to count them. And we got 26 languages, and we also got like many, many, many different cultures, how the people were brought up. And sometimes I have the impression we are a little bit blind on how we were raised and what we were growing up with, what shaped us. So in Germany, I would say it's a lot of like in e-commerce, DHL yellow and Zalando orange and Amazon blue kind of, right? So those are probably the last 15 years of e-commerce, like branding. These companies have done a lot for the industry. If you look to other countries, it's different, right? So there are still countries, there's no Amazon, there's, I guess, no Zalando. I hope I'm not wrong now, probably by now almost everywhere. And also DHL, you know, they don't have a network in many countries in Europe. Many people don't know that because you just live here in Germany. And for us, it was always important that every merchant in Europe has the chance to ship the products that it sells to consumers anywhere in Europe for a good price point, but also and especially with the best service on the last mile, you know. And this is what you have to do is to connect those carriers on the last mile with those merchants. And it's not easy. Why? If you have big volumes, let's take an example, ASOS or Zalando. If you have big merchants out of one warehouse, it's definitely the way to go. And it also used to be the way when we founded 2014, 15. But if you are a smaller merchant having maybe, I don't know, 5 pallets to 2-3 trucks a day, then you definitely need help if you want to connect to these countries in an efficient way and ship like the big ones do. And that's what we do. It comes with a lot of software, B2B software systems.
I see. Well, indeed, this is also a great source for many more questions, but especially when it comes to your digital solution. But we also have to postpone this mock issue if you're on a panel, otherwise on a beer next week in the open bar, which hopefully starts soon that day. But what I would look
at... As I know you guys, it will.
Yeah. If we can anything on the ECD, it's quick access to gin tonic. But before we get there, what I would wonder is, I mean, you're looking into the shipment area, of course, now for several years. And I wonder how innovative is this industry from your point of view? What's the next big thing in shipment? I mean, from my understanding, we're still struggling in getting the last mile out of the way for bikers and other car drivers in the city. So they are packed now. DHL comes like 4 or 5 days times a day. Is there anything new to the industry you're anticipating you're working for?
So what's quite interesting is there hasn't, from our perspective, been a disruption in the asset-based market. So those carriers that actually bring the parcels, you can also actually judge that from a consumer point of view, right? Actually, parcels got a little bit slower again, and people got used to it. Corona did the job. So Corona slowed the system down afterwards. People were just happy when they got it. So if we talk about innovation, I think it's small steps at a time, and what has changed and what will change from our perspective is the importance of locker points, of PUDO delivery. I know everyone wants to hear drones and that kind of thing, but I think that I can't speak for other countries like like states further east or further south. But I would say in Western Europe, I can't really see with regulations drones delivering big chunks of passes in the next years, but happy to be proven wrong. So if you want to free up the streets, and more importantly, if you want to solve the topic of a lack of drivers and people who actually deliver your parcels, you got to bring the stop density up. And that means locker point delivery. And at the same time, it's also more ecologically friendly. So I think we will see more on that side. There are also carriers who are specialized in that. And the second thing that we see is other private companies opening up their systems and networks. I think this is also what basically Jan is doing with Zeus. For everyone in the market. And we see this with Amazon at the moment on the last mile. So Amazon is opening up on the last mile. And I think it's very positive because that means competition and competition is for us the basis that actually things innovate and go forward.
Cool. That's I like the answer about the drones because that would be quite frightening. And Alex, back to you.
Interesting. I like the cultural perspective on things also, Thomas. It's really cool. And maybe one thing that came to my mind, I've been to a conference many years ago, 2018 in Copenhagen. And there was this one presentation talking about Amazon thinking about launching drone delivery in the Scandics, because you have these far away points of warehousing or drop offs, and
fair point.
And I just didn't cover it then. I didn't know if that came true, but it would make sense in areas like that where you have a delivery kind of 500 miles to the north. And
no, totally. I mean, in Sweden, you are anyways at like 90% plus PUDO delivery ratio already, always been, because further you go to the north, the bigger gets the distance between where people live. And that's actually, you're right, forgot about that. That could be an area that is open for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? Violet Zeus drones already?
Drones, basically. I mean, when I joined Zalando in 2014, that was already a topic, right? And I was not a big believer into drones because it's a highly complex way of delivering. So all the regulation that is needed to get that into place will take quite a lot of time. And therefore, for these more isolated use cases, and I mean, I think many companies already experimented with that. I also remember DHL, I think around 2015, delivering to islands, pharmacy goods, I don't know, Norderney or something like that, or to the mountains. That's where I can see it already being much closer. Doing it in a commercially viable way at scale certainly still takes some time. Do I believe we can get there? Yes, I believe we can get there, but it's way more complex than I think people thought in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's just always also the danger of having a small yellow DHL drone swirling behind you and you take the anti-insect spray just right away, right? Because you think it's a wasp.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, but that's another issue. So thanks for that. We come to the second part of your duty today as guests, Jan and Thomas, because we said, as we are at the doorstep of the ECD, we would love to kind of briefly, from a kind of bird's eye view, discuss the topics that we set up to be the topics for the panels on the expert stage and hear your opinions about it. Just really kind of out of your gut feeling or whatever you think about it. If that's okay for you, I would start with the first one, which is should be of interest, at least for you, Jan, because you're part of it anyway. So I'm going to read the title and the headline. It's called Fulfillment Across Europe. Does One Size Fit It All? And I hand over to Marcel as kind of a main representative of this panel and to ask a question maybe, or
to ask the question? Yes, first of all, just clarification. So it's basically does one size fits all comes from the textile industry, right? When you wear a onesie or something. What we mean is does one solution fits all? A bit derivated, of course, from the Zio strategy to be, you know, the core network, the core supply operating system, Jan, as you called it, for brands. Is that the solution where everyone goes to now or not? And of course, when from my heritage, when we spoke to brands and they came to our logistics solution, they always ask, oh, how individual can we be with you guys? And of course, you know, being responsible for marketplace logistics always said, there's no individual solution for you at all, because they're just, you know, you just obey the rules from the marketplaces. Still, if you run your own marketplace business, it could be interesting to be more individual. So Jan, what do you think? I mean, if you want to do this at scale, you have to, you know, normalize a lot of things, but how open are you for individual approaches from your customers?
So, I mean, if I look at the question overarchingly, right, then I would say the answer for me would be no and yes with an asterisk. And sorry if I come up with that answer. I always love to answer questions with three things, even if it's a simple question that can be answered with a yes or no. Let me maybe unpack the no and the yes and the asterisk for you. So first of all, is there one size fits all for fulfillment across Europe? I would say no from a customer perspective. And I think that's what Thomas has already also elaborated on. Every country, every market, also every marketplace has its own requirements, its own local shopping habits, and so on. While pickup point delivery is important in the Nordics, it's cash on delivery, for example, in Italy, in Spain, in France, customers love to get as much as possible with just one delivery. They hate split parcels. So therefore, there's no one size fits all when it comes to what customers expect across you. The yes refers to, could there be one solution that you could use as a merchant to cover all these very diverse requirements across Europe? That's basically the core idea behind Zios. So that you have one integration that you need in order to unlock multiple marketplaces, multiple markets, that you have one stock pool in one network that you can use to fulfill all your online demands, that you have one software solution, one control panel that helps you to manage all your e-commerce matters. And the asterisk that would refer to, is this all then provided just by one player? And is it all the same for every merchant? No, it's not. So first of all, we think it as an ecosystem. So there are partners, service providers that act within such an ecosystem. And secondly, I referred to that already in the beginning, it's a modular offering, a modular operating system, and you can use certain elements of it and others you use then different solutions for it, because basically there might be individual needs from brands that require more differentiated solutions. While for Zios, it's quite important that we build scalable solutions, and we can't cater for every particular individual need. I think we also don't have to, because the solutions we are providing are proven based on building the Zalando business on top of these capabilities.
Nice. And Thomas, what is your point? Will 7Senders be the new DHL? Will every foreign order go through your system one day because you offer an aggregation service which makes it much easier for everyone to go via 7Senders?
I guess it was supposed to be a compliment, right, with the DHL.
With the replacing of the DHL, yes.
No, as I said, I mean, you need the DHL here and there in Europe. So there are countries where they have their networks and are strong, and then they have their networks and their average. And then there are countries where they don't have it. So, I mean, for sure, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this if the goal and the vision wouldn't be to have a substantial market share in cross-border e-commerce. So that's maybe also important. I haven't mentioned that earlier. because we all know each other. So for the audience, so we only do cross-border deliveries, right? We don't have a stake in the domestic area. Also because we have the opinion that you can only add value, and this is very important for us as a company, only doing things where we can add value. You can only add the value in the cross-border supply chain in Europe from our perspective, at least in a substantial way. So, we would rather be partnering now and forever with every asset player. And we don't want to make players obsolete, actually the opposite. And I think, giving any size, any shop size, the possibility and the ability to use these carriers, whether it's a DHL or is a BRT in Italy or is a La Poste in France, Swiss Post in Switzerland, or using specialized PUDO networks, or connecting in the future to an Amazon last mile network, which we do with the first merchants now. I think that's highly important to us. And also to mention, I know it's a lot about platforms, and that's also the business for sure of Tradebyte. On the other hand, there's still a substantial number of merchants that just ship directly. You know, I'm quite probably with you that may change in the future, that, you know, everyone will have a share in a platform sale, but that's maybe also a little bit the differentiator. We don't really mind how shops sell, how merchants sell, whether they're selling through platforms or just direct. So everyone can have the access there, yeah.
I mean, Marcel, if I may, I'm so happy already that we picked this topic for not only for today but also for the ECD, because already with these 5 minutes discussing about that, I think everybody can feel and hear the significance of that fulfillment issue, as we're always per definition talking about a European phenomenon and a solution that is at not a larger scale possible, that would be global. But who knows how you operate in 5 years in the future. But this is such a huge topic, and also covers such a big area with these cultural differences. I think this is really fantastic. But we have to move on. This is just a little glimpse. Everyone out there, you can hear and see the rest about this topic next week. We come to number two, a thing that I'm very much interested in. It's called higher price points in a D2C multi-channel world. The next big thing? So what is this all about? So we were thinking about a panel about the premium and luxury segment, where we focus on kind of what are they playing, why are they playing, also maybe so late in the game, And my question would be to you, our guests here, that if you would agree, maybe Jan, you go first, that this segment and the premium luxury assortment of pure players of premium and luxury, or also assortments within a bigger brand variety in a brand, are still is still one of the driving growth factors of the whole marketplace and fashion industry, because this changed a lot in the last couple of months, but still I think they are, with double digits, the strongest growth factor. Or do you think the hype is over and we're coming back to normal also in that area?
So overall, yes, I think serving high price points is something that is being sought after. So that's also the reason why you see then that growth momentum. What we can clearly see is, like, there is need for this price segment overall. But even on marketplaces, we see behavior of customers shopping across multiple price points. So to say, from top to bottom, and customers combining a lower price point fast fashion item with a very iconic item from a high price point brand. And therefore, if you want to serve the diverse needs of the fashion conscious customers, then of course also high price points play an important role.
Thomas, what is your kind of take on this matter?
So funny enough, for us as a company, it doesn't really matter. I think what's quite good though for all of us is at high price points, companies also have higher margins, and there's probably a bit more win-win-win for everyone. right? For a future topic, I think you can see the significance and the potential even in the non-e-commerce or in the overall segment of luxury fashion, right? If you look at the LVHM stock, I think in the last 3 years, it doubled and went down a little bit now, but that's significant. Why? Because in the last 3 years, e-commerce stocks rather didn't do too well, as we all know, and fashion stocks also not from A to Z. So you can see that this segment works. It speaks to a lot of people who have the money that to afford it. And I think for me, what's important about that it has its place in e-commerce and it's growing because it means resilience for the whole industry, right? You don't wanna just depend on like super cheap things coming from wherever in the world being imported directly, like €5. Super low basket size, no margins possible for anyone. So I think adding a luxury segment to European e-commerce is a great pillar for resilience for the whole industry, and I guess also for companies like Zalando or others.
Yeah, I totally like the optimism and the positivity about it, Thomas. That's great. And yeah, we move on. So no further questions.
No further questions. No, but if I just may say, I think that one thing which is great about the luxury industry is that it's in a kind of disruptive state, right? We have a couple of players who are struggling. If it's retailers, we see a strong approach for D2C brands because they basically want to present yourself with the expensive Balenciaga shirt you wear, right? It's you don't care where you bought it, but it's about the brand you have on the shirt. So I think it's a great opportunity for companies to gain speed and provide solutions in this industry. So that's why I think it's quite interesting indeed.
That automatically, in a way, brings us to the next panel topic, number three.
Does it?
Because also premium luxury players play on marketplaces.
Huh. Special ones, even.
Even special ones. And that's why the next one is called What Makes You So Special? Why Specialized Marketplaces Outgrow the Generalist, which is a bold statement. But I checked the numbers. It is, in terms of growth numbers, it's the truth. Marcel.
It is the truth. What a natural transition to question three. Indeed. So why specialized marketplaces outgrow the generalists? By also saying with that that they become more interesting. Maybe that's also a problem for generalistic marketplaces. It is funny, though, because marketplaces basically work on the idea of network effects, right? The more customers you have, the more interesting you get for brands and so forth. The famous Amazon flywheel, which you have already seen scribbled on a napkin, demonstrating how fantastic we all are in e-commerce strategies. But how does that apply to smaller marketplaces? And that's maybe, Jan, for your question. Why do you think that smaller marketplaces, or let's say special topic approaches in marketplaces, can work? And what could be their value proposition when it's not pure size?
So I think it's very much related to the flywheel that you have been describing, right? Because there are specific demands out there, specific demands for example, luxury goods, or specific demands for secondhand goods. So there is a certain customer demand. And the more you specialize on that specific demand, the more you also then play on the other end, securing the right supply, the more relevant you become for the respective customers. And a specialized player can do that always much better than a generalist that has to cater for multiple categories, I don't know, electronics, next to fashion, next to whatever. And therefore, being able to build deep relationships, that's what it is about. Building deep relationships with the customers that have a specific need and a specific demand, and also building deep relationships with the brands and the supply side, and then making sure that demand and supply are being matched. And that's much easier if you just focus on one thing than if you have to focus on multiple things.
It's a great answer because it also shows that small wheels twist much faster than large wheels, right? Especially not in the middle, of course, that's the same. But from a dynamic point of view, I think it also proves why they are growing so much faster. Thomas, when we come to your business model, and I think one of the special interests Jan were mentioning is, for example, sustainability, secondhand goods, or even local approaches like eBay, for example. Does this affect your strategy, or is it something which you welcome because it gives more need to, let's say, specialized service providers like you? Or is it say, okay, this is not really cross-border then and therefore not really interesting for us?
You mean the small marketplace or sustainability?
Yeah, exactly. For example, yeah. I mean, let's say you have a Rebuy, for example, or Momox, right? So when they buy and sell goods, is this something where you say, okay, let's tackle this kind of market as well? Or do you say, not really, because they don't do it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm always a bit shy to talk about names and customers, but I mean, those two companies sound very familiar, and they are a great example of we don't really mind who ships parcels, right? Whether it's a Momox or a Rebuy, or whether it's Thomann or Essex, if you're selling through other big platforms or not. I think one difference is whether you fulfill with the platforms, right? But otherwise, I think specialized platforms and specialized marketplaces will always have their place. I'm very convinced of that. I believe it's not always black and white, because otherwise you could say, look at the Temu, that's kind of like not specialized at all and very, very, very successful in a very big segment of consumers, but not in a very, very niche segment of products. So I think if you do something very well, and if you find your space of consumers, the people that actually really look for the one thing, for example, refurbished phones or refurbished technology. Absolutely. And then I also believe that the specialized shop can be superior to just the overall one shop fit serves it all or offers it all solution.
Guys, I really have to say, this is so interesting. I just thought we should make a podcast out of it, I think. This is really, really good.
Yeah. Bold move, Alex, but let's think about it.
We should try that one time because I really like that. Coming to the next and last one, number four, and is a bit of a cryptic title, but you will get it soon. Game Changer D2C, what are the new rules of play for online fashion retail? This is interesting because we have that recurring at the ECD that we talk about D2C and stuff. And I remember 2018, we had Belén from Zalando on stage together with somebody from Amazon talking about this hybrid model, like wholesale and this other thing. And I think it didn't even have a name back then. And now I think it's not a new thing anymore. D2C, we all know that. It's established. But if we take kind of the technological development that whole industry went through in the last couple of years, corona acceleration, you name it. What do you think? I mean, one after the other, maybe starting with Thomas, because you're so on fire now. What is the most relevant area to focus on? Is it AI? Is it the sustainability to put at first in your strategy? Is it social commerce and live shopping? So what are the new kind of features for your D2C business that you think really that is the game changer in footwear?
I mean, I'm in the B2B, so if I have to think basically from the view of our clients, right? But I can also give you my opinion. That's always dangerous, because then there's going to be a D2C founder out there who's going to be like, okay, why does this guy talk about what I'm actually doing? But I can bring it together, and it's going to be very sad and probably a little bit unpopular, but it's just a fact. We have the one or other sustainability product. We've built that pre-COVID, probably like in 18. And when the money was in the market and money was cheap, it was super popular, like in COVID, right? People were just adding services. I'm not sure if Jan wants to comment on it later. It's probably a little bit difficult. But you could see like people just also spend more money on services, especially in our B2B area. And then when money got out the market, then our clients, and I think it's understandable, just realized, okay, sustainability actually costs money, even if it's just a few cents, and pulled out, right? For us, unfortunately, it never became of extreme relevance when it comes to business success. But we still believe it's right, it's important to offer it. And by the way, I'm also convinced that in the next years it will fly, just because of ESG and regulatory topics. So I believe that is not a choice. That is something you got to do as a merchant. And it's also good. And it doesn't have to be expensive, but I think it's important also that D2C shops care about it, because on the other hand, it's also a differentiator from whatever Chinese players that you can do. AI, maybe last thing, my guess, absolutely, but it will more and more become like what we are used to today, or what we did in the past years with other types of technology. I remember when we founded, the whole industry was kind of like EDI, data exchange, and the API was a little bit kind of the new kid on the block in our industry, not saying in general. So I believe that's just a question and a matter of time. We developing things in that direction. We will launch a product in that direction. And for D2C, I can only imagine using AI as a help to let people in a short time find the product that they actually want, also in their own interest, to, for example, reduce return ratios, right? So this is kind of like this win-win-win again. You can leverage technology to actually make it all better for everyone. And then you also hit the sustainability again if you lower the return rates. Yeah.
I think, Jan, this is a perfect assist for you to score the goal right now also, right?
I can talk also about lowering return rates, and we'll do that in a minute. And so overall, I think there is, unfortunately, again, not that one answer that would be the right thing for all these things. I think the answer is more around like we are living now in a world of constant change, right? I mean, look at the last 4 years, right? The pandemic, the war in the Ukraine that had a strong impact, not just on the Ukraine, but also on all of Europe. We see the occasions of global warming quite drastically over the last couple of years, and also these days, unfortunately. So therefore, we are living in a world of constant change. And I think what you need to maintain is flexibility. So flexibility to adapt to new trends. So if we talk about the topics you were just referring to, I mean, sustainability into the same direction as Thomas was elaborating on. I think there will be quite some regulatory change coming over the coming years. And you need to be flexible to adapt to this. Because what's clear is we need to get on a path that gets us to net zero. We see that live shopping, social commerce shopping is working. It's working in China. It's already working quite well in the US. Why shouldn't it be working in Europe? So therefore, it will be a channel that is important for merchants in the future. You need to be flexible to adapt to these channels. AI will make a difference to the industry. So, I mean, we are on the verge of also exposing size and fit technology towards our merchants. So size and fit takes AI as a basis and tries to understand what is the size and the fit of a certain garment, makes a huge difference to return rates. So to also score the goal that you just mentioned. So therefore, I think what you want to have as a brand or a retailer is a system that allows you to flexibly adapt to the changes that are ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, this couldn't end better, right? I would not say we end on a high because the topics are so serious in that matter, we have to admit. But there are a lot of challenges, but there are also a lot of chances in it, and a lot of, if you stay flexible and tolerant towards others and the market, you will find a way to get out of it, or to even still grow or find another way. So that, I like that. And I have to say a big thank you to you for being so open to discuss these topics that maybe a bit out of your kind of daily range with us here. And we can't wait to bring all these topics to life next week on stage with a lot of panelists that we invited. So thank you very much. You can, all your listeners, you can find the agenda with more than these topics on ecd-gate.com, and you can always take a look and then drop a note via duo@tradebyte.com when you have something to add or you think you have a better headline than we found. So just drop us a note.
We can even ask some of your questions next week if we find some. So if you want to add something to the panels, let's do it. And I think we created a big FOMO for everyone who has no ticket for next week, because I would come even if I wouldn't be on stage and ask the questions. So we're looking forward to these topics.
You were there every year, so I couldn't do anything else to bring you on stage, right?
If I have to come in, I have to do it.
Come in and find out. Oh, that was another thing. Thank you so much, dear Thomas and dear Jan, for being our guests. I'm looking very much forward to seeing you next week on the ECD in various situations. But as always, I'm very much looking forward to seeing you in the evening after the work is done, having a few drinks and just let go on the dance floor, and I hereby invite you to share the opening dance with me. What do you say?
I would be totally up for it, as long as you play NoFX. thanks a lot for having us. Was really fun, and already looking forward to ECD. And let's see what happens to the opening dance.
Yes, we'll see.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Alex, and really looking forward to seeing you next week, and also Jan and myself.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, that was really great. Thanks again to Jan and Thomas for being here. It's hard to find back. There were so many topics, but we have at least one really important topic for us that we want to talk about, and another one. So first of all, maybe something that is very important to Marcel and myself, and it's about the upcoming European election that is going to happen the next weekend. And I mean, I can only say vote, vote, vote. Go out and put your vote in the ballot. Every vote we give as Democrats helps to nurture the European idea and show a big fuck off to all these right-wing parties and clowns that are out there, because they for sure will go voting. So it's on us to do the same and be just more Democrat voters, right, Marcel? This is basically
Absolutely. I think I'm pretty sure that most of our voters, of course, you vote for us every time you start the play button on our episode. But for our listeners, I think it's quite clear. Just in case you are about to vote for a right wing party, please make sure to vote properly for them and make two crosses next to the name. I think this will help your cause immensely. So that's just a little hint. But yeah, I think it's also very important that we as an industry stand up for this. There are a couple of initiatives like e-commerce against right-wing parties, which is going on here in Germany. Many large players participate in it. And I think it's great that industry leaders stand up and propose the message. I mean, all the topics we spoke about, if it's cross-border commerce, if it's being successful as a D2C brand, won't be possible without Europe, and won't be possible with low entry and exit barriers for products which are shipped into our countries and to other customers. I think the let's say relative wealth which we still have here in Europe compared to other regions of the world are at stake And therefore, it's just important to be part of it and get informed.
Yeah, and I think this is because you might want to ask yourself out there, what has that to do with digital and e-commerce? So there are a lot of e-commerce players that are engaging in these kind of initiatives, you call them, be it About You, be it Zalando. It's a lot about going on an anti-right-wing and pro-European and pointing out that this is very important for the business and the industry to maintain this kind of democratic field of play here in Europe. And also what we thought about is the influence of digital networks. I mean, we know that these digital networks were huge in the election of Donald Trump back in the days already, and that we are hacked and influenced by whatever, maybe Russian or whatever, little spies that crawl through the cable, through the glass cable, into our computers. So there's a lot of things happening, but it's even, you have a very good example you told me, and I would love you bring it up here, because there is more to that. Also, the algorithms play an important part, right?
They play an important part. I think just to lead to it, of course, everyone knows that social networks, right, are important. I mean, if you were pro-Obama back 2009, I guess, 2008, when he basically invented the social game, everyone was for it. And if you were pro-Obama, you were possibly contra-Trump, and then you thought it was awful. And if you're pro-Trump, it was basically the other way around. I think this shows in which kind of a bubble we're living. Everyone is living in a bubble of their own people. I mean, even we see it on LinkedIn, right? And when I see posts on LinkedIn, they possibly reflect my political position. So I will hardly see anything controversial. And even then, I will say, oh, man, that's awful, right? So we have, and I think this is very important to understand that we are in a bubble, and it's no common ground what we read. I mean, I was totally shocked when Britain voted themselves out of their own healthcare system, right? Brexit. I was shocked when Donald Trump was voted, because I thought, well, maybe 10-20% of Americans will vote for them. But we were influenced by our bubble. And I just saw a video on LinkedIn where a young woman represented something from her Instagram feed where there was a piece about which required a strong opinion on topics. I think it was a gender topic, and she said that her commentary beneath this video was vastly different to the commentary her boyfriend was seeing when he was seeing the same post, right? And he was seeing the commentary which basically promoted the male point of view, while her commentary promoted the female point of view. And I think that social platforms who have the idea to mainly support engagement, get buzz around topics, have a specific relevance to the user, so they stick to it. I mean, every one of us is scrolling through LinkedIn and Instagram right before we sleep, right, and get our latest infos. And we just have to be aware that this is not what's going to happen out there. And we have to make sure that we inform ourselves properly to what we're going to vote. And I think for this vote, it's also very important to understand that it's not about giving a hint or a tip which kind of party you vote to maintain the life in Europe you prefer, right? But it's just about the fact that you just don't vote for people who are against the whole system and want to revoke it. And go back to really dark times by promising something which cannot be held. And I think everyone who's trying to form a narrative out there is a mainly, let's say, mono-sided person. And whenever you see that, if you agree or not, just go somewhere else, maybe to a medium of a political party you do not agree to, just to read what they say, and then you start thinking about the arguments, make up your mind.
But in the end, there is also an entertaining part of it, because you mentioned the fact that you have to choose your party, and right, there is this wonderful digital German tool, and I don't even know if it doesn't exist or does exist in other countries. It's called the Wahl-O-Mat. So maybe it translated into Vote-O-Mat or something. Not Wahl-O-Mat, that would be a different thing. Choose your spirit animal, which would also be Lovely. So there's the thing. To explain, so there are a couple of questions. I think it's 25 or 30 or whatever, and you answer them as honest as possible, probably not biased. So you do it as honest as you can. And then in the end, there is kind of a hierarchy and percentages of parties that you, let's say, are closest to from top to bottom. And this is really interesting. I think I don't know anybody who doesn't do it in my network. And this is kind of really something also to share. And this is funny. So I was thinking, coming back to our core here, why? Or wouldn't it be great to have something like a Brandomat, Marcel?
I think it would be awesome. I mean, look, we speak about marketplaces a lot, right? And if you go to Zalando or Otto or Amazon, I mean, there are such a huge amount of brands you can choose from. And, you know, we tried with algorithms and AI. Instead, we just could have a Brandomat. You just answer 25 questions and you narrow down the whole assortment by far. And I think this is a great idea. I also think that basically, if you really think about it, I think fashion and politics are much closer than you might think, right? I mean, if you want to get chosen as a brand, right, you have to be, you know, you have to be distinguished to others. That's just maybe as the parties are. You need a clear communication of what you want to achieve with your offering. You have to build a brand. You have to keep up your promise. I know that's tricky for some players on both ends, right? Like, there's no problem. You can wash this shirt at 60 degrees. At least you can wash it. I mean, I don't think you can wash a Temu shirt anyway. You should hire your staff by knowledge and skills and not for political reasons, pun intended. Both worlds wouldn't live well without foreigners, for example. If it's in producing or, you know, getting style input. And at least I can say brown just doesn't look good on yourself, right? I mean, it's a color you normally don't wear, and it hardly fits with other colors. So I think there are many things where the Valomat can be easily transformed into a Brandomat, and it will solve a lot of problems in our industry, I guess.
I also thought from a B2B, from a business perspective, you could really kind of do a Brandomat or a Matchomat, and you get matched to your perfect retailer when you answer certain questions. But maybe yes. This is really too much of a business plan already. We should keep it in private. Just keep it in private.
But entrepreneurs can mail to duo@tradebyte.com. So in case they want to share and have some billions to share in VC.
Oh, more than welcome.
Yes.
More than welcome. And opposite to what I said 10 minutes ago, because that topic was also very important and serious for us, we're going to end this very, very long show today on that little smirking funny note with the Brandomat, and keep the rest for the episode next week. The week after the ECD, sorry, because next week, and that to promote once again today, the ECD will happen on the 12th of June in Munich. For those of you who have no tickets, we are sold out, but maybe you drop a note and we can see what we could do. There are a lot of movements in the final days before an event. And just show your interest is already something I like a lot.
If I may add, every conference has a no-show, right? In our case, it means that people don't come. It doesn't mean there's no show. As we all know, a couple of days before, people get sick. I don't know. There are many other reasons. Maybe your own business requires
and
attention.
Also, as the good weather is coming back, we not only have a small no-show rate, but we also have a no-shoe rate. Because I remember last year it was so hot that people were walking around barefoot, and this is what I really like. This is when you feel comfy, right? You just kick off your shoes and feel good.
That's
so let's do that a bit more. Walking barefoot in the sand, even if it's a metaphor. And I will thank you, Marcel, for this very special and extraordinary episode. We heard a lot, and we had that really, really important topic at the end. And I'm going to see a lot of you out there next week in Munich at the ECD, which makes me very happy already.
Yeah, me too. You have to see me as well. So I'll be there. Enjoy my day, my 2 days. It's a 2 day event for many of us as we start our journey a day before. Looking forward to it, Alex. See you back in person again.
And yes.
Yeah. Let's have a nice little show next week.
Let's have a nice little show. Thank you and goodbye. See you in the week after the ECD.
We will. See you then. Bye bye.
Und damit schließen wir ein weiteres Kapitel der unendlichen Geschichte des digitalen Handels. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Hast du Anregungen oder Themen für zukünftige Folgen? Melde dich gerne bei uns. Bleib neugierig und informiert. Sende uns eine Nachricht an duo@tradebyte.com.